Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to our special program this evening, where we are going to discuss intense basket weaving. Now, a lot of people have went down to places like Charleston or Florida and witnessed people doing basket weaving. But what we're talking about here is intense basket weaving, where you must weave a basket while on the back of a donkey that has been lit on fire. That is an incredible, incredible stunt to see. Let me tell you. Wait a minute. That's not what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about some education.
Crazy, mad, insane world.
Weevils wobble, but they don't fall down. Pass it on.
This space is for rent. How much are you willing to pay?
Cool, Mr. Oliver Goat Cheese.
Crazy, mad, insane world.
Easy to fish, easy to whine, easy to moan, easy to cry, easy to feel like there ain't nothing in your life. Harder to work, harder to strive, harder to be glad to be alive. But it's really worth it if you give it a try.
Takes one to know one. Jack rules. Here is your host, Jack Hatfield.
Fun stuff today. I gotta get situated here. This is getting serious. we constantly talk about the shortfalls and pitfalls and holes in the walls of the education system here in America and pretty much everywhere a lot. We have went over in detail. We almost every week talk about a teacher. Well, we kind of stopped doing it because you could do it every week, about 10 times a week. Teachers having sex with students, so forth and so on. There's all kinds of stuff. But what we're going to have here in a little bit coming up is the founder of Adam West Academics. His name is Adam West, and he will be on the show, and we are going to talk to him on what does he see, what is his goal for his Adam West Academics, because what he really, really works on is the one-on-one, the tutoring. He created a tutoring method that he believes is the best in the world, and he has now taught other people and is trying to spread this across the country to get people back to understanding that it's all about being smart. One of the good things about on every Brain Quest book that I bring home, I love the fact that it sits there and its tagline is, "It's okay to be smart." I tell people that all the time. It's perfectly okay to be intelligent. It is real simple, real easy to be an idiot. Real easy. It's lazy. You don't have to work to be stupid. You don't have to do homework to be stupid. You really don't have to do much to be. It is real easy to be. Do you understand how easy it is to be dumb? I mean, everyone knows someone who's just not all that bright, and you look at him going, "Well, he seems happy, but yeah, he's got nothing." It's real easy to be dumb. I'm sure that's not what we're going to discuss, but I just digressed a little. It's okay. Before we get to Adam West, let's go over some stuff. All right? Let's go over some headline news about things that are happening in the school system. Okay? What about the bully teacher who wrote a blog and then called her students jerks and other more profane names like lazy whiners, you know. She said she's met weird kids, stuff like, "I hate your kid," you know, "I don't care if you lick windows, take the special bus," you know, all kinds of bad things. And, of course, the students found this blog and got very upset and called her the worst teacher I ever had after they read the blog, of course. So she was suspended from the school, and then now she has been given her job back. Okay. Because CBE, Central Buck School in outside of Philadelphia, has graduated 100% of its senior class this year. 94% of its graduates are attending college, and 3 of every 10 graduates graduate with a 3.7 or higher grade point average. Can you believe that? So apparently they're doing something right there. Now, other teachers in her school saying that she would be completely ineffectual here now that she's been reinstated. Now, she did request a transfer because I'm sure she was thinking she might, you know, have a hard time teaching students because she'll be the teacher that said bad words about us. But guess what? They denied her request. In other words, is it possible that the so many arcane rules to fire a teacher that they couldn't find a way to get her fired for saying these words? Because wouldn't it be tantamount to free speech impediment that they so often grasp onto when a student says things? Right? I mean, if they were to say you're fired for saying things that you want to say, that's pretty bad. Yes. Was it a little harsh? Yes. Should she have done it? No. But what do you do as a teacher in today's world now? I have teachers talk to me and complain to me. They go, look, we can't do anything. We can't get the... If the student sits there, actually, it seems like the student sits there and says, force feed me the material. I'm not going to do anything extra for you. I'm not going to go out of my way for you. I'm going to complain when you tell me to do something. I had a teacher talk about stuff. He gave his first test of the year. Of course, school just returned back. We're going to talk about that a little bit, especially with Adam on the line. Gave his first test, got two two students with a zero. I have no cough button. Two students scored a zero, three students scored a two on a test, first test. Now, is that a teacher's fault? Probably. No, not every time. The teachers are sitting there going, "We're our hands are tied. We can't do anything." And the students have to do nothing because most of the time they don't care. They get by with the bare minimum. They realize what the minimum is, just like a child does in parenting. He realizes what the maximum is for him to get in trouble and does it. Gets to that point. If I get to this point, I know I'm going to get in trouble. Here's an inspector goes in and inspects teachers, talks about teachers that he sees, and he says some teachers are the worst I've ever seen. Said people, teachers fail to plan lessons and have frequent confrontations with students. One child reported a teacher stabbed him in the hand with a pencil. Another claimed to have been elbowed in the shoulder. Some say the start of one lesson was chaotic. It took 5 minutes to settle the class and take down the register. No engagement with pupils. Frequently no engagement with pupils. Frequently with the relationship between the students and the teachers broken down. The pupils have now shown no respect for the teacher because he does not show respect for them. Is that the teacher's fault? Probably. So what do we do here? What about a middle school student in Southern Florida who drugs his teacher's coffee because the teacher yelled at him in class? Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes with a lot of students in a classroom, you're going to have to raise your voice a little. Well, that just didn't sit too right with this kid. So he put some drugs in the coffee. I'll get you back. I'll get you, teach. For some reason, right now, and this may give people a glimpse into the depth of my past history. But first of all, I saw the Ferris Bueller principle in one eye. And then in the other eye, I saw that guy in the We're Not Going to Take It video with Twisted Sister. Arr, 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 arr. So, in other words, I have heard about those two things. When I was not born yet, they were out. That's what I'm saying. I've read about them, I think. Anyway, back to what I was talking about. The teacher basically yells. Now, again, this is a 13-year-old boy. 13-year-old boy. Got yelled at. And got so mad, he then went and dropped clonidine in her coffee. Now, the coffee is used by people with insomnia, ADHD, and high blood pressure. So, wow. Well, she probably went to bed and then wanted to pull the covers up, pull the covers down. that was funny. And high blood pressure, she probably got a headache. Oh, wait. It treats high blood pressure, so she probably went to sleep faster. And the teacher experienced side effects. Anyway, it's not the point of what he put in. She was dizzy, nauseated, sleepy, groggy. Not the point of what he put in there, but the point is that he did it because she yelled at him. Now, when children were interviewed, other children in the class were interviewed. One of them said, I know the boy, he should have just gone to the principal. Another one says, that boy mostly does what he wants. He doesn't ever get disciplined because the teacher is not that strict. You understand what I'm saying to you, ladies and gentlemen? The teacher is not that strict. Now, thank goodness this teacher that got poisoned for yelling at his child at the class is pressing charges. I can hear some of you now. What? Why would he do that? Okay. So now we see here that students drug teachers. We see that teachers are the worst they've are under inspections are some of the worst they've ever seen. We have all kind of inappropriate relationships. What about the teacher? Because 75% of all. Wait a minute. I have this fact sitting here real quick. Oh yeah. Over 50% of all public schools report a criminal incident to the police. 10% report serious violent crime. So here's a teacher in extremely critical condition in the hospital. Now, again, this happened in the past. When he tried to intervene between two students fighting. Now, he was unresponsive, bleeding from the ears when paramedics arrived at school. He's fighting for his life. I'm pretty sure the update is that he did survive. But what I'm saying is there's violence in the schools. Is that the teacher's fault? Maybe. Students' fault? Maybe. Now again, this fight began while breakfast was being served. And a surveillance camera, by the way, seeing as there's surveillance cameras all over school now. Is that the teacher's fault? Students' fault. Surveillance camera caught the whole fight. the principal or the teacher was just doing what I'm sure every teacher should do, is break up a fight, right? You're supposed to be safe in school. Now, what about the attack of Teacher Day? That's right. Six schoolgirls aged 12 and 13 were arrested for encouraging friends to sign up to group on Facebook for Attack a Teacher Day in Carson City, Nevada. One of them sent out a message to 100 classmates to target teachers. All the girls claimed it was a joke before they were arrested. What do you think it was? Was it a joke? With all the school shootings? Is that not good? One student, let's just look at some of their statements. One student used the word die before a teacher's name, like die, Miss Smith. Others wrote they would attack certain teachers on this day. Attack. No specifics, such as weapons or attacks, and how they would be carried out were mentioned. It was just very vague. Die, attack, kill, I will, yes. They were suspended for school for 3 to 5 days. Now, here's another fun fact. These six girls were good A students. Now, one of the middle school teachers who taught two of the students said they were surprised because the students seemed normal. Shows you just don't know what's going on in their minds or what's happening at their home. I don't understand their motivation. I don't think they know the consequences because they're young. They're pretty immature. It's a teachable moment, and hopefully it prevents it from happening in the future. Most students knew it was wrong. A lot of students said that if they knew about it, and they said they knew about it and deleted it. After seeing the posting, they deleted it from their own wall. The teacher went on to say children's stresses are so great they can act out on their frustrations. Parents need to monitor what their kids are doing on communication devices. Is this the teacher's fault or the student's fault? What about the teacher? Teacher Richard, Mr. Trimling, allowed two 15-year-old boys from his GCSE class, I don't know what that stands for, but I believe it's an upper class, to ride on a sledge in the snow as part of a practical technology lesson. He didn't for a moment think it would cost him his job, but it did. Neither pupil suffered any injury, neither they nor their parents complained. But the 37-year-old head of the Design and Technology Department was sacked for breaching health and safety policy. The rules meant he had to carry out a written risk assessment in such activities and ensure pupils were wearing appropriate protective clothing and headgear. Now, let me go into this again. The man was teaching practical technology, and this sled ride was showing what he was talking about. The students didn't complain. No one got hurt. The parents didn't care. But there's rules. Are these rules too deep? So is this the teacher's fault? Or the student's fault? Or now, add a third layer, the educational system's fault. How about the teacher that was recently suspended? Let me get the facts here. Hang on one second. Do-da. Don't you love when I'm having to find in the stack where this stuff is? I have so much. I just want each and every one of you to know how much work goes into this. I believe he had the temerity to actually bring tools into the classroom on a class talking about tools. That's right. No, that would be wrong. Because what class on tools? A required discussion from the educational system requires this discussion on tools. Why in the world should that actually involve real live tools? Right? It's better to have the kids read the tool, right? Look at a picture of the tool. Tell them how it should feel when they get a hold of it one day. So, is that the teacher's fault? The student's fault? Or the educational system's fault? Well, let's go into the educational system just a tad. If the educational system is broken, which, if you hear anyone talk about it right now, everyone says something's wrong and something has to be done. Is that correct? Yes. Well, I hear an awful lot of complaints that there's not enough money in it. I'm about to prove that wrong here in a minute. I hear people complain that the teachers can't do their jobs. I hear that people complain that the students are out of their minds. I hear that the curriculum has gone so far out of whack that even when the teaching is done correctly and the student really wants to learn, they're really not learning what they should. So what do we do? What do we do? What about children in gangs? What about gangs in school? It's absolutely stunning. All right, why is it a shock nowadays when a student, little Johnny, eventually grows up and graduates from high school and he's unable to read his own diploma? This is happening all over the country. This is for real. In America today. Now, we just celebrate, a lot of people just celebrated, and I do mean celebrated. I had reports of restaurants with tables of moms at lunch this last week in various roles where they were celebrating and toasting and having their beverage that their kids are now back in school for the day. What do we do? What do we think about that? Does that add another layer to our argument here? Wait a minute. Hang on. We have, is it the teacher's fault? Yeah, check. Is it the student's fault? Check. Is it the educational system's fault? Check. Is it the parents' fault? Wow. Wait a minute now. I just had a story about it. Kids wanting to kill their teachers. Two kids almost beating to death one of the teachers during a fight. I had all kinds of other stories on how the teachers were failing the kids. It's kind of amazing about what we've just talked about. We've had all kinds of things occurring. So right now we have, is it the teacher's fault? Is it the student's fault? Is it the educational system's fault? And now we have, is it the parent's fault? So how does one get around all of these things? That's what we got to soon figure out. And that's why this whole show is going to be about education, and that's why we're going to have this founder of Adam West Academics, founder of the Adam West Method, here today on this show. Now, a little background real quick. West was born in 1983 in South Africa, where his family taught him the value of education from a young age. He was able to identify the schools often lack the resources, that would go back to education system, to direct information in a manner that fits each student. So he began forming the preliminary structure of his new tutoring approach. And what better way to get a hold of a person's mindset than to go one-on-one? So without further ado, I would really like to introduce you to Adam West, founder of Adam West Academics. How you do, sir?
Doing well, Jack. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. I just gave a very brief overview of you. I would like you to tell everyone else a little more, if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, I got a degree in physics. It's been a passion of mine my whole life, and I ended up going to school for it. But when I got out of school, I was actually looking at moving into studies in nanotechnology, and that's actually why I went into physics. Is I really love technology, and I love you know, where society is going with technology. And while looking for a grad school to enroll in, I actually started tutoring on the side. And I think this happens a lot of times with students. I mean, graduates will tutor between undergrad and graduate school. And when I was doing this, I realized that I love it. It's a lot of fun. I had a knack for it. I'm not really your average physics student. I'm nerdy, but I'm also not quite that nerdy. I've kind of got the balance of both going. So tutoring naturally was something that I had an aptitude for, and I just started tutoring and continued to tutor until I didn't have enough time. And at that point, I decided I should really start hiring some tutors. And I did that, and that was about 3 years ago. And ever since then, I've been hiring a ton of tutors and interviewing them interviewing thousands of tutors, trying to find the best ones. And teaching them my methods and developing a program for which they could best help more students beyond the students that I could help on my own.
Right.
And,
well, one man.
Yeah,
one man would be hard to run around the country.
Exactly. And I'm here in Los Angeles, so I was able to, tutor students here. And we've actually extended into online tutoring, which I guess we'll probably talk about a little later, but I still tutor people around the world now, actually. I started doing that. I have a family that's been traveling around the world, and I homeschool them, which is a really interesting development in education. So the company grew, and I had to develop processes to streamline filtering out all the applicants and tutors that are, there's a lot of people out there that want a tutor, but really it takes a specific set of skills and that are hard to find. So we were able to find a way to kind of filter through tons of applicants and find these tutors that could do that as well. So here I am. I still love technology. I want to do that one day, but for now I realize that education is really a very important topic as well, and my calling, and I think there's a lot that can be done right now in education.
Well, you and I are sounded like you just said about me word for word. I'm a computer guy. I'm in information technology. That's what I did all my college studies on. Ended up doing seminars on computers and teaching free classes on computers, also paid classes, and then went into adult ed where I had 100% a better job or a good job teaching for all my students, a better job or a new job for every one of my students. That was 100%. Until the school board got a hold of me and said, "You're not teaching what we give you." And I said, "Yeah, that's because I'm trying to get them good jobs." So I had to quit that because they were very upset at my method. And understanding exactly how you are talking about in the nerdy part, yeah, there's a nerd part to me, but then I'm a karaoke DJ, so there's also a crazy side. So it's pretty interesting that we are very, very much in common. So we may need to talk even further later after the show.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a great combination. I think it cultivates success in the society. You know, really having fun with the complexity that's available to us, and you know, being a geek. And I was talking to somebody, and they were trying to define the difference. Actually, I think it was my brother. The difference between a nerd and a geek, and I can't remember which one's which. But I think a geek is somebody who's like geeking out. They can be cool. They like it, but a nerd is not cool. I was trying to figure out what the difference is. But
right.
Anyway,
I call the geek squad the nerd herd because they're not very geeky.
I like that. Okay, so geeky is cool, and yeah, exactly. That's what I thought it was. So that's what it's all about. I think, you know, really loving, and you know, it could be any subject. I mean, are you a geek if you love acting? I mean, there's acting geeks, you know, I mean, that's like a cool thing to do, but it could be anywhere from history or math or science or English. All of it, the pursuit of knowledge is very valuable for, you know, self-cultivation in society and adding what you can, and having and most of all having fun. You know, there's some really cool stuff I was doing today with my business, and I was thinking, wow, I was actually showing my assistant, and I was showing her how we're putting together this kind of complex method for a marketing thing that I'm doing, and it was very creative and using a lot of different aspects of understanding and knowledge to put it together. And I think a lot of times students don't want to pursue education because they think it's not useful, or they don't think it's going to be fun, or they don't like it, but it's all in the attitude. It's really the attitude makes a huge difference. If you can change your perspective and you said earlier, I was taught the value of education from a very young age, and that was mostly because of my brother, who is 11 years older than me, and from a very young age we were having fun with it. You know, I was looking at, you know, what's a nanometer, what's a picometer, oh, that's smaller than a nanometer by, you know, 1,000 times. What's a femtometer? Like all these things. I was like, what comes next? And you know, that was my 6-year-old interest in naming physics terms and just an example of how, you know, it can be fun. It can, for a kid, you know, it's fun to think about those funny words. And
oh, absolutely. And, I mean, you mentioned you homeschool. Your family, is that true?
Oh, it's not my family. It's a family.
A family.
Yeah. I have a particular family who literally travels around the world, seeing everything. I mean, they have been everywhere: South America, all through Europe, Asia, everywhere. And I teach them through Skype, and I've never met them in person, but it's like I'm part of the family. It's really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, and the dad is a very intelligent guy. He started a search engine optimization SEO business,
right?
And he runs it remotely, and is, you know, really showing his kids a great education, showing them the world.
Yeah, making them rounded. I mean, that's neat. I was born in Turkey, so I saw all kinds of other stuff before I even got back to America.
Where's your accent from?
Probably the South. That's where I've been the most.
Okay, yeah, I'm hearing a Southern accent, but okay, Turkey, cool. So
you're, twang hanging around these people. Get a small
That's
twang
cool.
hanging around here. I have to tell you about some of the stuff that I worked on as well. I created the cult. As you know, my passion right now about education is how there's so many people that are lacking in education and not being proud that they're smart. Just a couple shows back, we talked about the book Think, where they talked about how the young ladies can name all the Kardashians, but they can't name the three branches of government.
Yep, so, exactly.
Pretty bad. And then I created the Kolk method, the creative use of logic and knowledge in something. So it's creative use of logic and knowledge in technology, or creative use of the logic and knowledge in cooking. And
yep.
you take that experience and you work it together of what you know and what's logical, but then you creatively use that, like you were saying, make it fun in some manner. Let me throw some stats at you, because that's where I was. I don't know if you heard the first part of the show, but we talked about, we had teachers that were doing inappropriate things. We had students that were writing on Facebook, attack a teacher. We had two teachers that were fired for doing their job. So I was going through the list of, is it the teacher's fault? And then when I created the students that weren't caring or beating up the teacher, is it the student's fault? Then when the teachers were fired for breaking the rule but actually doing what they were supposed to do, is it the education system's fault? And then right before we started, I added a fourth layer, is it the parents' fault? And you know, there's 75.9 million students out there right now, and there's 4.6 million faculty. So with that kind of ratio of teacher to student, your method, you know, versus, you know, a teacher has to look at a large number of classes, where you're, as the tutor, looks at an individual one-on-one. Tell me how that is making a big difference.
Oh, it's such a different ballgame when you're teaching one-on-one, because especially in math, for a student to really understand the material, and I mean, I would say it's analogous to taking a salsa lesson. I don't know if anybody, or if you've ever taken like a dance class of sorts or something
I
like
did,
that.
I did, but they banned me after 5 minutes.
Yeah. Me too, maybe. So if you're standing there in a class, and you have one instructor saying dance like this, it's so easy to get it wrong. And if you have a one-on-one lesson with a teacher, a salsa teacher, they can give you critical feedback that's specific to exactly what you're doing, and you progress so much more quickly. And that progression feeds positive feelings about what you're doing, and students don't become frustrated; they become excited. And so, on a higher level, that's why one-on-one is great. Now, in math, it's even more critical, because so many students are missing fundamental concepts or prerequisite concepts, because math is a cumulative subject, so it continues to build on itself. And if a student's missing a prerequisite concept, which is very easy to happen, even great math students are missing them, what happens when they learn a new topic is they don't know what they're missing. And it's easy for a specialist, somebody who really knows the material and really understands how to convey that knowledge, it's easy for them to say, I see what you're missing, and to help them fill in that gap. You can't do this in a lecture because it's a one-way thing. And so one-on-one education or interactive education, two-way education, is really critical. And it doesn't have to be one-on-one. It could be I'm actually trying to merge my love for technology and education together, which is going to happen naturally whether or not I do it. But later on I see algorithmic programs, virtual reality environments, teaching every student one-on-one. It won't matter if there's 4.6 million faculty and 75 million students. It won't matter because the faculty will be kind of the team leaders, and they will deploy these programs and they will make sure that people are doing a good job. It'll almost be like somebody managing a factory where they can make sure all the machines are working correctly and make sure everything's set up right. But really, every student could have a very optimal one-on-one relationship with a computer program. But I know it sounds a little bit cold, but I can see it done in such a way that it's really genuine and a wonderful endeavor for these students. But we're talking 10 years down the road. So for now, one-on-one.
That sounds super futuristic.
What was that?
That sounds very super futuristic, like you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's. I'm pretty certain it's going to happen here, and I would like to make it happen myself. So, but you know, there's some limitations that we have with virtual reality, artificial intelligence, algorithmic programming. Also, the most important thing in this whole thing is to determine the algorithm that is optimal for students to learn. And that's something that I can see it's possible based on a lot of my teaching, my personal teaching methods, and the method that I try and help my students understand. I mean, my tutors understand for teaching is it's very algorithmic. Now you have to dynamically apply the algorithm, and it requires somebody who really knows the material to do it. But conceivably, this could be done with a computer program, and so. That's, anyway, so the one-on-one in-person or online tutoring is infinitely more beneficial to a student because you can go in there and you can help them understand these missing fundamental prerequisite concepts. And I've seen it 1,000 times. A student who doesn't completely understand how to add fractions, and then they're trying to do something in algebra that includes fractions, it causes issues. Or somebody in another much more advanced thing, say they're learning multivariable calculus, but there's some aspect of the proof behind the power rule in calculus one that they don't completely understand. It's causing them problems in multivariable calculus. So, I mean, it's really because math just goes on and on and on and on. And also physics and chemistry are the same. Any what we call them the hard sciences versus the soft sciences, which are like biology. So the hard sciences also build in a similar way to math and science, and math does. So.
Well, yeah, I can see that. I can see if in a student in a school environment or a large classroom environment misses something, and then they go into something that adds to it, you have the cumulative effect of not knowing.
Exactly.
So you became, you didn't learn this product, so the next product that incorporates that, the cumulative effect of you not knowing that, now you don't know that and this.
Exactly.
And then when they add that third layer, you don't know that, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very good concept right there, to break back, like you say, to go back to the foundations.
Yes. The missing foundations, because some of it's there, some of it's not, and it's different for every student.
Right. So that's key. Now, when I was asking the questions, you know, is it the teacher's fault? Is it the student's fault? Is it the education system's fault? Is it the parents' fault? You know, this program started as Fix the Family, Fix America, and we changed it to the Jack Hatfield Show because I yell at people a lot.
You haven't yelled at me yet.
No, we won't be yelling at you. You're a guest. Yell at the number of people that, you know, I talk about parents that you know, kill their children and or torture their children.
Oh, yeah.
and parents that one parent starved her child to death because she was playing a video game. And that's a progression of lack of education to me. So that's why education is a big deal. This is why, you know, we're talking, because education is a big deal. I've got a lady coming on in a couple weeks. She does writing workshops. Can you believe writing is actually leaving the school system? They're taking, there's no writing. Arizona's just quit writing. The state of Arizona said, you know what, we're not going to even teach writing.
Wow. That's,
yeah.
You know, writing is one of the most important things that I do on a day-to-day basis. That's the one thing you can't get away from.
I know. Isn't that amazing? I mean,
Look
back in history at all of the incredible written, not only novels, but letters, just simple letters that gave a in-depth appearance to a human being, especially like if you want to learn about a certain human being, you look at the letters they wrote and you can learn all about them. But look at the text of today's youth. You don't learn too much about them. There's not a lot of substance, not a lot of depth.
Yeah.
Just to go a little further in some stats that I found, in 2009, most states failed. They had in the National Assessment of Educational Progress creates state proficiency levels. I'm sure you know this. Grade 4 reading, 35 of 50 states failed, but they were below basic. The other 15 were simply basic. No state got to proficient. In grade 4 math, there were 7 below, 42 basic, only 1 proficient. So, I mean, the failure is large. The failure is massive. So in your one-on-one where you're trying to get the concept of education and it's okay to be smart into the individual, which is very, very important, I would like to know how I mean, you've got to be thinking right now like I am, like every time I'm on this show, I'm thinking I'm saving the world. You've got to kind of be thinking you're saving students by what you're doing.
And I would say the world too, because education is like I know you believe this in the bottom of your heart as well. It's the foundation of everything we do. The human action and choice is based on what we know and what we understand. And actually, when I made the switch from wanting to pursue technology to wanting to pursue education, I realized that education is even a more exciting, fundamental topic than technology, because it drives technology and it drives so many things in our society. So yeah, I think these students, they're a lot of them are on the wrong path, and getting them on the path that will result in success and a different paradigm of education to them. We want to shift their paradigm of the way they look at education, and that's a huge goal. I actually think that is, when you're talking about who's at fault, I think it's our society's paradigm of education. I think that's what's at fault. And you can't really pin it on any one individual or a class of individuals, but you can see that paradigm manifest through each class in certain different ways. And,
okay, so you're saying that, you know, it's some teachers, some students, some education system, and some parents.
Yes, exactly.
Kind of like a stew. Stew.
Well, you know, I would even say maybe more than some, it's a little bit to some degree in all students and all parents. It's in some maybe more than others.
Mm.
But take for example it's common for students to think that school is not cool. And that attitude is, you know, it's just the status quo. It's the way we, it's the
yeah,
way
but where
we
did
think,
they get,
oh, no.
Where did they get school is not cool? It can't be when they got to school.
That's true. They're probably getting it from the peers that are already there. They're probably getting it from television, from pop culture. And I would say that it could change if the teachers made it seem more cool. The teachers probably deep down don't think the students are going to want think it's cool, so they reinforce that. So it's, there's some great teachers out there that I've heard about and read about who are doing, and also, you know, obviously our tutors as well and myself, who make it more fun and make it more interesting. And so in that way, it's the teacher's fault as well, but they're also part of society and they also think a certain way. And for example, this will be a little geeky of me, but I love Star Trek. And the new Star Trek that came out, I was noticing something about the Vulcan species on that movie, and they love math and science education, and they make it a part of their culture. And when did knowledge become something that people consider boring? When did we become so lazy that we stopped pursuing our most natural human capacity, knowledge, and replace it with other forms of entertainment? Because the entertainment that students pursue and most people pursue is not that academic, and it's you know, if we look at sports are great. I think sports are great for the human body and for camaraderie and miscellaneous aspects of the human nature. But I think that imagine that sports was or math and writing or poetry was on the same level as sports, and people said, "Wow, that's a superstar math kid." And everybody knew him because he's making these profound changes in mathematics at the age of 18. What if we had superstars and celebrities in society that were academics? I mean, how many people know who? I'm actually jumping. A lot of my heroes are actually business heroes who are academically involved as well. Like somebody like Elon Musk is one of my idols, and most people don't know who Elon Musk is, but he's a physics and engineering master who started Tesla Motors, and which is, you know, the company that has the electric sports car, and also
right.
SpaceX, the company that is putting that NASA's hired to put people in space. And Elon Musk, you know, to me, he's my hero. And you know, I couldn't name off the people on Jersey Shore, but except for Snooki, I guess. But
Snooki,
you know,
absolutely.
Students were, if we're more into that, and they thought, you know, who are the heroes in these intellectual capacity, in an intellectual capacity? So the focus of society is all backwards, and I think that's a huge part of the issue, and it affects teachers, students, probably the people that run the education system. And parents too, because everybody believes that way.
Okay, right. Okay. Well, I mean, you're running the gambit now. You went wide on me. You went very wide on me. By saying society glamorizes, you know, glamorizes obviously Snooki and whoever those other people are. That's entertainment. Okay.
Yeah.
Isn't there a way that a person can learn that entertainment is one thing, but knowledge is crucial without the need to change society as it is? Because if the person, if the individual, if a current generation, if a current generation simply said, you know, entertainment's one side, and knowledge is the other, I believe society as a whole would balance, because then you would know, hey, Elon Musk is doing some big space flight, commercial space flight thing here recently. And then you would also know, you would be able to know that one of the persons on Jersey Shore got in a fight with the other guy. You know, you can have this balance of knowledge. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's not intelligent to know that there was a fight on the show, but but you can still have it to have a human side, an entertainment side, or you can say, you know, I like this song or listen to these lyrics. Then, going to what you're saying on making the Elon Musk and the Adam West of the world, you know, and the Jack Hatfields of the world, another type of hero would be, hey, look at what they're doing. But the person has to have interest in what we're doing. The person has to have a desire to learn before they start looking at people who have learned a lot. Does that make sense?
Exactly.
So learning about the Jersey Shore crowd absolutely takes no effort. But learning about the people that are education-based, that makes you learn. Right?
Yeah. I said something about being lazy. When did we become so lazy earlier on in the discussion? And that's exactly what I was referring to, is it takes effort to have your hero be somebody like Elon Musk, because you have to understand, why are they your hero?
Right.
It's really easy to see a basketball player do an awesome slam dunk and be like, wow, that's cool. And that's another form of entertainment appreciation. But yeah, I definitely think, you know, it's sometimes nice to, you know, take asylum in leisure and enjoy somewhat more mindless entertainment. But like you're saying, I think it should be both. And I think the balance would really be beneficial. And that the attitude is what's missing. Yeah.
Right. The very first thing I started the show off with, other than the fact that it was insane basket weaving, was it is real, real easy to be stupid. You have to do no work to be unintelligent. None whatsoever. Whereas to be moderately intelligent takes work. And then, like you said, the cumulative effect of not learning is where we might be steering our children wrong, and that would lead to I'm going to always point back to the parent, because the parent can really, really help the child one-on-one a lot more than anyone else.
Yes.
But back to, let's say, a child's learning, and so the cumulative effect of them not learning something while the class moves forward could steer him incorrectly. That's where your company, you know, the tutoring, the one-on-one, is going to have the largest effect, right?
Yes, getting people back on track.
Okay, so when you get them back on track, do you also kind of get them back on track with parental support? What can the parents do with you and your company?
Well, I think just seeing... you know, parents get frustrated, like students do, and they're humans, and, you know, sometimes it becomes an emotional thing for them, and they lose control, they lose their ability to act strategically and lovingly, and they get worried. And I think when a parent sees their kid get back on track and their kid's attitude change, it resets the system. It resets the dynamic between the student and the parent. And a parent can go back to doing what they should be doing. I think most parents do is, you know, hope for the best and pass on their wisdom and keep the ball rolling. We do, you know, always update the parent, tell them, you know, give them feedback, and that, you know, it takes a very unique look at a dynamic between a parent and a student to come up with suggestions, and sometimes that outside perspective can shed light on something that the parent has not seen, and really that interaction between the tutor and the parent, updating them and giving advice and, you know, making suggestions is really critical, and it does help in keeping that progress going all the way through the student's education.
Right. Yes. A parent is just very, very critical in some junctures. I mean, because if they're not getting support at home, they go home and see two parents always sitting on the sofa or in a beanbag eating Cheetos, it's going to be real tough to get motivated every day. and I do believe that we have created, there is a generation back one that is like that, and it is like a plague now. And so we have to stop it somewhere. And by making it cool to be a geek, like you say, or cool to be smart, would definitely take that a long way, because just like the kid could go home, parents are sitting there, and he can go, you know, this just isn't cool, so I'm going to go read a book. You know, I'm going to go get smarter while you guys are droning off into nowhere land. This is a valid question that I just thought of. This had nothing to do with anything that I planned so far. Okay. But it is a topic that has struck me often. And you don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but I really would like to ask you.
Okay, go for it.
Why do you think, as we just discussed, the laziness of the stupidity, I mean, the absolute ease of stupidity, why do you think you are yourself was born in South Africa? Elon Musk was also born in born and raised in South Africa, right?
He was born there. Yeah, that's right. Funny that you knew that. I like that you knew that.
Okay, so how come a guy that comes over here, helps co-found PayPal, working on Tesla, like you said, trying to get commercial space flight going, you trying to change the education system, you believing that education is crucial, the foundation of America is based on learning, and once you get the knowledge, innovating and innovation, why did it take two people in a very, let's say, slightly suppressed portions of the world, dreaming of America where they heard everything is possible, and then come over here to try to create the American dream, but you're not from here. You've just heard of the utopia that it is, I believe it is, but it is failing massively because of many reasons I won't go into right now, but I go into it every week on the show. but it took two, you named another one. It takes two foreign-born, and I was foreign-born, and I'm sitting here trying to save America. What has happened to the people that are born here in America, a generation depth? Why is it that you, Elon, and I are coming here trying to save a country we weren't born in?
You know, why is it that we are trying, or why is it that we're succeeding?
Well, some would say successes are a little less than today's failures. Right now, I would say right now, because again, like I told you, I changed this show from "Fix the Family, Fix America" because I really honestly believe if families can get back together, around a dinner table, parents can start getting more involved in their children's lives, I believe America can be fixed. That's why fix the family, you fix America.
Yeah.
I agree with your positivity. Trust me, I'm a positive person. I agree with your positivity on our successes. Yes, one person may listen to the show and go off and say, that's awesome, I'm going to go call Adam West tomorrow and my kid's going to be a tutor tomorrow. Or they can say, you know, Jack is stupid, but he said something smart tonight, I'm going to go listen, I'm going to go do what he said. And then people can go look up Elon and say, you know what, I want to fly to space, and I'm going to call him up and see what I can do to help. So, yes, there are successes. But look around, read, you see that a lot of stuff is failing. I mean, when you search for teacher and suspended, or teacher and pupil and teacher and anything, you get a billion bad teachers. You search for students hitting teachers, you get a billion bad students. You search for educational failures, and you get a million hits on schools that have failed. You know, in fact, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, I mean, in reading, there's in that same National Assessment of Educational Progress, they have adult literacy. Okay, this is adult. This is me and you and Elon. Okay, they have below basic, intermediate, and proficient in prose, document, and quantitative. Now, prose is continuous reading like a novel. Document is non-continuous. And then quantitative is computations inside the words. Adult literacy on prose, below basic is 14, document 12, quantitative 22%. I mean, that's almost a quarter of adult literacy below basic in all aspects. Okay? And then basic takes it up to almost half. What?
Wow.
So again, we're looking at, yes, you are succeeding in tutoring and creating a company and going out there and changing the world. I'm going around trying to motivate people, change the way businesses think. You know, I have two books. I go and I try to teach as many people as I can. And then Elon, of course, is doing all he has already done. And like you say, the commercial space flight. We do have successes, but then you have to be with me on the reality part that there's a lot of failure going on today.
Yes. Well, I think. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
The question is, you were on society, seeing education. What do you think right now? Because of the question that I started this whole rampage on, and I'm so sorry that this went on so long. It's you know, foreign-born people are coming over here trying to save the country that they thought was the great utopia. Why is that?
Well, I think that there's an interesting filtering operation that happens. If you think about it, a lot of people would say that, oh, it's got to be that South African people are smart or good business people, or that, you know, people from Turkey are smarter than business people, and people jump to that, but that's not true. You have to think who is resourceful enough, ambitious enough to immigrate. I mean, when my parents immigrated, they left everything. They went from great jobs to terrible jobs. They started their life completely over at the age of 35. And so what kind of person does that? And I think that's the filter. For somebody who says, I want to go to, and also, you know, U.S. attracts people that want to do something and to say, oh, there's this utopian or near utopian society, or, I mean, that's the dream, of course. And I want to be there so that I can do my thing. And so we end up finding some of the best from around the world. And of course, there's great people in the United States already here, but it seems that there are a lot of people from around the world because we filter out the rest of the world, bringing the people that are ambitious enough and excited enough to even be able to get here in the first place. So I think that's why the people that are succeeding. You see a lot of them from other countries. But I also think that the other aspect of your question was, why do we want to do that? I think it's human nature to want to, well, it can be human nature to want to take what you're best at and really do something with it. And you know, there's a lot of people that want to help others and a lot of people that want to just have fun doing what they do best. And a combination of those two things is why we do it.
That's interesting, the filter. The fact that, you know, you're sitting there in other countries, but all you hear is, you know, the Utopia America, and so you just want to be a part of it. And so when you come over here, you may actually be looking through rose-colored glasses, and you don't see the limitations or the, like, my entire life, someone said, I don't think you can do this. I go, watch. I mean, because my entire life I was told by my parents, you can be anything. So failure is never an option for me. I mean, never an option. Yes, of course, I failed. I've had businesses closed. I mean, things happen. But it was never an option. I would undertake, I have, and still to this day, undertake things that people have looked at. I designed a network that I couldn't get anyone to go do, so I had to go build it myself. Because everyone said that there's no way my company can do that. And I said, well, I'll just have to do it myself.
Wow.
Does that mindset, why is that mindset lost on a person born here? Is it because the generation prior, now that we're looking, that we were just, you know, discussing the parents sitting on the beanbag, eating Cheetos, watching TV, is that what they're seeing too much of? I mean, because you said your parents worked. My parents, my dad was in the Air Force, worked his tail off. My mom had to do all she could to just, you know, keep food on the table because dad was doing all he did. So I saw the benefits of hard work. And so the one thing I really wanted to do is work smarter because you saw what hard work did. And now I want to have people work smarter, not harder. So that had made a definite impact on me. What things in your childhood made an impact on you to want to do this education thing? You gave a little history about you in college. But what did your parents ever show you anything?
You know, this is actually really making something clear to me. And it's interesting that, this is a great discussion because you said your parents were very, they told you could do anything. They probably always praised you when you succeeded. And my parents were exactly the same. Always. And my mom used to always say this, Adam, you can be anything when you grow up. And she really emphasized it because she didn't have those opportunities. In South Africa, we don't have these opportunities. And a large part of the reason why they brought us here is they wanted the kids to have, I have three siblings. They wanted all of us to have opportunities. And all four of us have done our best and really taken full advantage of it. And I think it's because, mostly that it's the attitude. It's the, I can be anything. I can do anything. And that confidence, and it's the same in education too. I mean, when you're studying math, it's the confidence that makes all the difference in the world because confidence changes your actions and your actions determine who you are and what you become and what you add to society. And so I had a student a few days ago. I obviously still tutor a bit, but, you know, trying to make sure that everybody gets tutored properly. So I trying to pull back a little bit from my own personal tutoring, but I like to, you know, keep them there in the trenches and helping out. But I had the students a few days ago, and I asked them to come up with a proof, a very, very challenging, obscure proof that I've never been exposed to in my entire career of education. Nobody's ever asked me or shown me to do it, and we were messing around with some problems and having fun with it, and I was like, you know what? It would be really cool if we could find and prove with calculus and polar coordinates what the area of an ellipse is, and come up with a generic equation for the area of an ellipse. And this is somebody who has taken 1 year of calculus, and you know they're in high school. And I said, all right, well, we started working on it. I showed him some ideas so he could go with it and planted some seeds. And then I said, all right, why don't you finish this off? And I'll see you next week, and I want to see what you come up with. And I was genuinely excited to see if he could come up with some really interesting ways, or I wanted to see how he thought, how he approached it. And he called me the day before our session, and he said, you know, I'm stuck. I can't think of it. And I remember telling him, the most important thing is that you just try, and with all the confidence that you can, invoke all your confidence and just go with it. Go with the creativity that you possess. Go with the knowledge that you spent the last 10 years developing about math, and come up with something, because the simple act of trying to do that is an exercise in confidence, and it's an exercise in creative thinking. And that, I mean, this is a whole other topic we could talk about, but what we're teaching in school with respect to math especially is completely backwards. I mean, mathematicians that have succeeded in the last 2,000 years, they didn't study math the way we're studying math. They didn't do it at all like this. And so when I get a student that's like this particular student who is open to it and advanced, it has this attitude and passion for the material, I just run with it, and we learn math in a different way, which is like this example. But it all comes down to the confidence. And was that the original thing I was talking about? I'm trying to remember how I got into this line of thought. Do you remember?
Well, you were talking about, you know, your parents. You started with your parents and how they told you you can do anything.
Yes, yeah. And they instilled the confidence in me. And I think the confidence and the attitude that I can do anything, and I think that's something that was so heavily talked about growing up that it really did change me. And I've seen some of my students who are advanced students and doing really well, and they get tutors because they want to do better, or they, you know, want to excel even more or go faster. Those students have parents like that as well, who've helped them to be more confident and be more excited and realize the opportunities that they have.
Right, and I think you just caught yourself feeding off a person with a similar mindset. You said you saw the confidence in the student, so you gave him something even further to boost his confidence, and that is something that I do, you know, I see myself doing, is that is going and finding people that are happy about living.
Yeah, exactly. It all comes down to mindfulness, joy. I mean,
right.
that's what it really comes down to. I'm actually heavily into meditation. My second biggest hobby after my work. And meditation, I think, is something that it's very different to the meditation that's kind of the status quo meditation. But when it's done this way and it's done right, you can really, really find another level of clarity and joy doing living, being happy to live, and that's one of the things that I think would change education as well, is finding that inner peace.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Excuse me for one second, Adam. I got to tell people that Adele Amani's Magic Minute will be heard in its entirety later on in the show if we get to it. If not, I'll play two of them next week. So those of you who are missing Adele's Magic Minute at the 9 o'clock mark, we're so sorry. And we didn't have our second opening because this interview has been too interesting for me to stop. So next week we'll get maybe we'll get back on path. It's my show. I get to do whatever I want. So we'll see how it goes. But we always want to get Adele Omani's Magic Minute now, just in case, Adam, if you're wondering, Adele Omani's over in England, but she sends over a 5-minute Law of Attraction mini course that we play at the half point. We add a little bit of a class to the show after me ranting for 2 hours. We put her in the middle of the 2-hour rant, and she talks about, she teaches, confidence boosting and the way to think and use meditation that you just hit on. She talks about, having these thoughts in your head and moving forward in your life with these positive thoughts. So that was, I just wanted to make sure that I said that because we did run long and her Magic Minute was not at 9, and she's probably going to, let me know that I missed it. But this is, we have to keep going here. Are you still available to keep going for a little while?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm loving this conversation. It's great.
Yeah, this is interesting because we've touched on a lot of things. One of the things that just was touched on by me with someone else the other day was, why is it that people with the mindset of what America is supposed to be is what's making America great. But the people born here are sitting here looking around going, who's going to help me? Why I deserve more without doing any more work. And that mindset right there alone is one problem why knowledge is not gaining, class or not gaining in stature. And that is, I deserve to have everything without a lot of work. Well, as we said, it's easy to be stupid, but learning takes work. Now, your method, the Adam West method, and by the way, just so everyone knows, we are saying West, W-E-S, you are not Batman, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, just wanted everyone to make sure. The Adam West method of tutoring, taking people to a different level in their mindset, going back to the foundations, as you spoke about, taking the parent a little more involved, right? The one-on-one versus the large class, you think that the tutoring is the best way to go. You've talked about how all of the way people think about education in general, the societal look as a whole, could be fixed, if we can make it okay to be smart. Now, what about your method makes a child or an adult, I don't know if you tutor everybody, but what about your method makes your student get that, like you just told that person to go do the area of an ellipse, that's kind of like a hands-on experience. So how about what about that hands-on experience makes the difference? What about your method that makes the difference on the experience?
Well, there's a, for a long time people were saying, what do you do? Because I would go to a student and I personally would turn them from an F's all year long, and then the next test they'd get an A. And people would ask, what do I do? And my staff actually at the company would ask, what do you do? We want to tell the tutors what you do. And so this was a couple of years ago. I sat down and tried to figure out exactly what I did. And so the thing is, there's a lot of elements at play. And the one that was involved in that particular situation with this student and the finding the area of an ellipse, the goal was a few things. By finding the area of an ellipse, it's somewhat random thing to do. But the concepts involved in that problem are all very critical and important. I mean, we're dealing with concepts in calculus, concepts in trigonometry, concepts in algebra, all different types of concepts that are being reinforced by doing that concept, that problem. And at the same time, in addition to being reinforced these fundamental concepts or these critical techniques, the student is also getting the opportunity to be creative, which is how all this math got started in the first place. As a creative mathematician came along and said, hey, we could do it this way. And that is such an important skill that is never, I've almost never seen that taught in school. And there's one particular school in Los Angeles that does that, Harvard Westlake. Give a shout out to them. Really love that school. They push the students in this way, but the students are all extremely ambitious and have had a lot of support in a lot of different ways to even be at that point. But so that's a huge part of the Adam West method is teaching proofs instead of just formulas. So if a student can understand why something is and have the skill and technique to build up a formula from scratch, sometimes if it's a short enough proof, they don't even have to remember the formula. And it's hard to remember formulas. As a matter of fact, there's so many formulas. I teach so many math subjects, physics, chemistry, science, biology subjects, that I don't remember all these formulas, but I can realize what the formula is in 10 seconds. And just because I understand the proof. And I want students to approach it that way as well. Because when you understand the proof, you can start to, that's where the real skill lies. And that's what allows you to be creative and say, oh, I remember this proof. Maybe I can prove the formula for the area of an ellipse now. And really, that's exactly the same thing. It's finding the area of an ellipse is proving the formula. And taking a formula itself is kind of like saying, well, that's the answer. I'm going to plug in these numbers. It's almost useless to even try. Sometimes it's useful to know which formulas to use, and sometimes you want formulas at your disposal, but you need to know where they're coming from, or you at least have to have explored that at some point. And so that's one aspect of the Adam West method that is really critical. Another aspect is what I've called progressive dynamic response. And progressive dynamic response is really where that whole algorithmic learning thing comes into play, and I see it done with computer systems here in the next decade. And what it does is it dynamically responds to, so let me run you through a scenario. So a student may or may not know something. And really, most tutors or a lot of tutors will say, do you get it? Do you understand? And the student will say yes or no. That is not an effective way to find out if your student understands. The only way to find out is to prove to yourself that the student understands. And the only way to know if they understand is to ask them a question. So what we would do is say, can you answer this? And based on their answer, you can see how they're thinking about it. They answer it correctly, you say, okay, I'm going to make this a little bit harder. Can you answer this? And you ask a series of questions, even 100 questions, depending on how difficult the questions are or what level of math you're in. But at lower levels like algebra and geometry, pre-calculus maybe, you can ask all these questions and get a really good map of the student's comprehension. And once you understand a map of the student's comprehension, you can go in and fill in those gaps. And this is how we're able to isolate weaknesses in the student's foundation and strengthen those weaknesses and move on to the next. And it's almost like we're parsing through their entire comprehension of the subject. And so the reason I call it progressive dynamic response is because you're progressing dynamically through a student's comprehension, and you're responding to them. So it's a two-way interaction, and it's a dynamic interaction. And this is something that is not easy to implement, because you have to have, personally, you have to have an absolute mastery of the material and know everything about it, which is the first challenge. But you also have to have a a mind that can see what's missing by the way the student answers the question. So
I mean,
it's almost like a math problem in itself.
Right. You're looking at, like you said, the mastery of the foundation, but the person also has to have creative use of that logic and knowledge, which, you know, something that I was doing a long time ago, to see, you know, to go down the path that you're saying, go down that dynamic path to grasp the understanding of the depth of understanding of the student. Right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So,
well, somebody asked me, I actually did an interview with a magazine the other day, and they're asking me how do you assess a student? Because standardized testing is ridiculous, and you can learn to pass a standardized test without knowing the material. It's really ridiculous, which is actually something else that we do teach. It's something that I started out not wanting to teach, but so many people wanted help with it, and it is a part of the admissions process, so we decided to start teaching it. But there are techniques that can help you get these answers. And the question this the person that interviewed me was asking is, well, then what is the best way to assess a student's understanding of a subject? And the first thing that came to me was the best way is to tutor them. That's what we do as tutors is we find out exactly what they understand, and you almost developed a visceral understanding of the student's mind, and that's really the best way. Of course, that's difficult to do in the books and the thousands and millions of students, but that's truly the only way you can understand what a student knows, and then it's somewhat subjective at that point. Anyway,
Now you just hit on something that I was going to question you about as well, and that is in tutoring and in your mindset and in my mindset, and I'm sure in all your tutors' mindset, the success of the tutor is how well the student learns, right? But in today's world, in today's education system, the success of the teacher is measured in dollars. I mean, just,
yes,
you know, 1 month ago, they caught hundreds of Atlantic public school teachers and principals that have been cheating for the past 10 years on standardized tests.
Yeah.
Because the superintendent collected $600,000 in performance bonuses over the 10 years because of these cheatings over her supplemental $400,000 annual salary, with being honored with superintendent of the year. Now, what they did was she created a culture of fear, intimidation, and retaliation where silence and deniability allowed the cheating at all levels to go unchecked for years. So the success of today's education system based on money really, really is going to hurt the student because the people that are doing the teaching are lying for the dollar. Whereas the success of you and me and the other tutors, that the student, the success of you is when the student actually learns the topic.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. The incentives aren't aligned properly. We attempted to align them, but there's two things going on there. One, the test doesn't necessarily reflect what the student knows, so the teachers start teaching the test. Two, the teachers can cheat. And actually, I was reading an interesting article. With statistics, you can actually easily see when a teacher has changed the bubble answers because
right,
there's a certain randomness that has to be static. There's an expected randomness, and when a teacher does it, you can see when the randomness has gone away. And so that's actually one way. I wouldn't be surprised if that's how they caught these teachers, actually. And so
I mean, they've been doing it for 10 years.
I don't know how they got away with it that long. I hope that we are running those random checks on the test, but that's just crazy. So
that hurts our students.
Exactly. It totally hurts the students. And, I mean, one solution would be to find a better way to test the students that is administered on an even higher level so that people couldn't. I mean, it's okay. It's conceivably okay if it's based on money because maybe it's going to make them work harder. But if they can cheat, that's a problem. So if you motivate people to cheat, and you open the door to them cheating, you're going to have to expect that eventually people are going to cheat. And so that's the problem.
Well, I would have to say that no matter what we do, it's always open to somebody doing something wrong if they have it in their heart.
Yes. Exactly.
I mean, someone's going to cheat no matter what we do. I mean, there's no way to – if they find a way to cheat and then they have it in their heart to cheat, then there's going to be a cheater.
Unless you can prevent it completely by building the infrastructure in such a way that it's impossible to cheat, which is obviously very difficult. But, yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, but again, if humans are involved, it's never impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, I would guess so. Yeah.
Right. So, but going back to that whole process, the reason that I brought it up is your method and your tutors and you know, when your success is when, like you said, your student goes from FFF to A.
Exactly.
Right. You don't get anything unless the student goes to FFF to A.
Yes. We have to actually show real results.
Right.
Real results.
That right there goes back to exactly what we're talking about way, 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 way back in the beginning of this whole thing was the desire to gain this knowledge and the reward base of people being happy with learning. Because right now you look, like we said, the reward base of watching Jersey Shore is, you know, just blunt, mindless entertainment. The reward base of learning of Elon Musk or Adam West, you know, is people that are looking for knowledge.
Yes.
So we want to have a reward base based on results, not based on, you know, an arbitrary standardized test that you're talking about, which I agree with you very much. So it's I did very well on standardized tests without a lot of work. I can honestly say that I was very, let's say, how do you say hungover in another language? When I took my SAT.
that's pretty funny.
Yeah, and I still you know, got in the top whatever percent, little tiny number. But that's only because I thought the education system that I went through was particularly bad. And I never cracked a book. You can ask my teachers. I just made hundreds on tests because I understood their material because I was doing other things to learn. I wanted my reward basis was internal because
that
I saw so many people.
Yeah.
Right. I saw so many people around me that were not smart, and I was going, man, I do not want to do that. My mom said I could do anything. I definitely don't want to do that. So that's where all of my education came in. It was all based from the inside. Just like when you came here, you were told you could be anything. It's all based on the inside. Do you work on motivating qualities as a tutor, or do you simply stick to the logic of the material?
I touched like 2 of the 14 things in the Adam West method. So they're just one that was applicable to what we were talking about, another that was probably the most important aspect. But yeah, motivation is very important, and that's a huge thing when we actually choose our tutors. We choose very personable tutors. If a tutor can connect with a student, and the student can look up to the tutor as a mentor, as a friend, as a big brother, a big sister, that
role model.
As a role model, yeah, that's when you can start to motivate them. And so
Right. It's
hugely important that a tutoring session is not just about the math. Sometimes I'll walk into a tutoring session, and the first 5 minutes, I'm gonna chat with the student. I'm gonna see how they're doing, and that rapport, building that rapport with the student, is absolutely critical to getting them to, you know, eventually what happens is you come to the session and they want to impress you because you're their role model, and they want to be like you, and they start to see your personal passion and understand. I mean, passion for math and science and knowledge education, I believe it can be passed on from one person to another. I mean, you can really inspire people. And so tutors need to be cognizant of that. And a lot of times it happens naturally because you pick tutors that love the material, love to share it, and are cool, so they're able to connect with these students. That's a big part of the method. And you know, when people were asking me, well, what do you do? Part of it was, well, I just be myself, and that's part of myself are those things. So we look for people that have some of those qualities as well, and it makes a huge difference.
Right, and yeah, trust me, I've looked for all my life trying to find people with similar qualities like you were trying to do right now, and I'm sure that's very difficult for yourself. And passion for the subject, I mean, hits home massively. I mean, if somebody didn't have passion for it, in fact, if there was no passion, if passion didn't motivate someone to do something, then there would never be another Detroit Lions fan. There's absolutely no reason to root for them other than your dad had passion for, you know, generations had passion for Detroit Lions. That's a
exactly.
Big stab during the football season to Detroit, just in case anyone was wondering. I had to keep it like that. All right, so motivation is a very big key, and like you say, it's massively important. Now we're touching on about 11 minutes here, Adam. People that are listening to you, very impressed by you, your knowledge, your tutoring. Where do you tutor? Where does your company tutor now? And then the next part of the question, part B, will be how do people get in contact with Adam West?
All right. Well, we tutor all over the country. We've got tutors in New York, L.A., Boston, Chicago, Miami, Houston, Austin, Dallas, Phoenix, Tucson, San Diego, Orange County, Seattle, and San Francisco. So we've got actual people in those places. And then we also tutor everywhere else because we tutor online.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, one of my tutors, who's just the absolute superstar, he's in Boston, and he only tutors online. And on the street from him, prefers to tutor online with him because it's more convenient and a better session, overall just a better session for him. There's a lot of tools on the computer, and it can be easier to have a session on a computer, which is really, this was new to me a few years back. I was like, wow, that's
cool.
I
mean, with the proliferation of, pads and tablets, I believe that tutoring from anywhere at any time. I mean, a student now can be motivated, can be actually hanging out with their friends and then go, hey, man, I'll be back in about an hour. And then go really entrench themselves with their tablet into tutoring and then come back and look like they've actually just, you know, went off and went shopping.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
So they can stay one of the cool kids while they're becoming one of the cool geeky kids.
Exactly. Yeah, I always have a lot of respect for the kids that are able to pull that off. It's difficult.
It is difficult, and we also lose, you know, we lose a few because they get sucked into the other side a little deeper than the cool geekness. But then there's always the victories. Again, now you want to talk about how people can get in touch with you and your company. Because right now I'm pretty sure the parents that are listening are going, you know what, I'm gonna get them people to tutor my kid on X. Now, we homeschool our child.
Great. Awesome.
Yeah. So, but we're always looking for any other areas. I mean, we'd love for any of, like, we'll take her to someone else that can teach her X you know, because of the different perspective. She sees us every day. So,
exactly.
You know, having that ability. So just think about it. Even people that are homeschooled can use tutoring. A lot of homeschoolers listen to the show. So even homeschools can use this tutoring process to just get a different perspective. Yes, your child is already, like my child is in second grade, reading on a fourth grade, fifth grade level, doing fourth grade math. But the different perspective can bring in even further and move her further along faster than just us alone. So don't want the homeschool people to think that tutoring is not important either. So tell people how to get in touch with Adam West as well.
Well, tutoring, I just want to add something. Tutoring is not just for people who are failing in school and need to get good grades. Our students, and I wish there were more, and a lot of the students that come to us for that reason. But there's students that come to us who want to excel. There's students who come to us, like you said, for another perspective. There's and by the way, we do teach the GMAT, standardized test, GRE, GMAT. You know, I've taught a 45-year-old woman before going back to school, and she needed to take the GRE, and she lost all the math that she ever learned. So there's all different levels that we teach. But really, for homeschooling, there's, you know, parents who take it upon themselves to be great teachers and help their kids. That's really, really amazing. But at some point, a specialist who specializes in that subject. I mean, if you're a parent and you're a professor of mathematics, great. But then you're not going to be able to help them with history as much, for example. So somebody who specializes and does this on a day-to-day basis with many different students, many different learning styles, can really find ways to penetrate that mind. That can sometimes need some really powerful instruction. So anyway, I love homeschooling. I think that's, I'm probably going to do that with my kids too. And I think that's really a great thing. But okay, so in terms of getting a hold of us, we are at adamwest.com, first of all, and that's seven letters, no T on the W. I mean, mm-hmm. T after that. AdamWES.com.
No,
yeah, not Batman. And as actually the kids say these days, not Family Guy. The mayor and Family Guy is named Adam West as well.
All right.
So I get that one a lot. Also,
well, he was the same. He was the Batman guy. So that's pretty sad that you get the kids today are seeing him on Family Guy, but I just showed you some of my age there.
Yeah, well, actually, I know that. I didn't want to make that distinction because it's a. He's actually the mayor of Quahog, and
Quahog, yeah.
Yeah, and then Adam West apparently was the mayor of Calabasas, which is it's kind of a joke to be the mayor of Calabasas. You know, it's a city, town in the valley, outside of Los Angeles. Anyway, yeah. So kids don't realize that Adam West is actually the actor for Batman. So it's
right.
Kind of funny. I agree. And you're actually, yeah, you're very informed, Jack. You know a lot of stuff. I'm impressed. Between the Elon Musk stuff and the stuff about Adam West and the mayor, very, very cool.
I said, I'm the one that reads the entertainment and seeks the knowledge at the same time.
Yeah, that's great. It's very cool. So we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we have an awesome blog that we just started. Tons of information on all different subjects of education. I wanted to go more than just tutoring with it. I wanted to have a blog that was just a resource for everything,
right.
Education. So that's called tutoringeducation.com. And then there's adamwest.com. And then there's our Facebook page. Facebook.com/AdamWestTutoring. and of course, you can always call us at our number, which is on the website. So,
okay. Well, one quick question. We actually have all of 3 minutes. We'll get the 90-second bleep here in a couple seconds. people that are sitting here going, you know what, Adam, sounds great and everything, but tutors are so expensive in this economy. You know, I'd love for my child to be learning, but right now I don't have the $150, $700 an hour that it takes for tutoring. What do you say to someone? Now, me, knowledge cannot be bought by any amount of money. What do you say to someone about with concerns on money?
Well, we actually have a really unique program when it comes to that. We only charge by the hour, 1 hour at a time. So no upfront packages. It's kind of, you know, all you can eat kind of thing. Maybe all you can eat is not very accurate, but you can get as much tutoring as you want. So you don't actually have to purchase a package of 20 hours at one time like a lot of tutoring companies do. And I did this on purpose because I didn't want anybody to continue with a tutor that they didn't really like. And that's one of the ways that we can ensure the quality of our tutors is to know when somebody doesn't like their tutor and get rid of that tutor. And so, yeah, so we go hour by hour, and actually here until September 15th, we have a special first session free, first 2 hours free. And we just want people to get a really good start to the school year and get started early on and make sure that they build the foundation of the course that they're taking and succeed.
Right, there you go. That's great. So that'll allay some of the people's fears on, you know, I got to spend $10,000 to get a tutor for 2 hours a day for 10 weeks.
It's not that expensive,
That's great. So, listeners, you have no reason not to contact Adam West at adamwest.com or tutoringeducation.com is where the blog is. Adam, it has been an absolute joy. I thank you for taking us down the road, even though I kind of went off, you know, we went off the beaten path, but I think we found some interesting things together during
Absolutely.
The same time. So,
yeah, Jack, it's been wonderful. Thank you.
I would love to have you on again later on, maybe in a month or two. Like I said, I have another lady doing a writing workshop. I'm really on to, like you say, making heroes out of people trying to bring knowledge to the masses. So with that in mind, I'd like you to anybody else that you would want to highlight, we get them on here and we get talking, and people can keep listening to the quality that smart, wonderful people like yourself are doing out there, even though, you know, we're born in other countries. We're trying to make America what it's supposed to be, and that's what this is all about. So I appreciate it. I thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
All right, and you, there's my lady. So, Have a great one, Adam, and we'll talk to you later, okay?
Thank you, Jack. We'll be in touch.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it, Adam West. Just one more quick way to get in touch with him, adamwest.com. His blog is at tutoringeducation.com. He has his own method. He can teach you, homeschoolers, public schoolers especially, all of you, get to work, get smart. We highlight stupid people on this show all the time. We're also giving you, remember, we never bring up problems unless we bring up solutions. Adam West is just one of them. Here on the Jack Hatfield Show, we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. Ladies and gentlemen. I am testing the fact that this show, even though it's 2 hours long, there's an after show sometimes. And if in the recordings that after we do the sound and recordings, if this can actually be heard in the recordings, this is not heard live, but in all of the recordings and archiving that we do, if my voice is heard right now in the Jack Hatfield show after show, then it is possible that we will go into a third hour each and every week with the best stuff. Well, no, not the best stuff. With some really interesting stuff coming in the third hour that's not broadcast live, and it will be known as the Jack Hatfield Show After Show. So this is just a little test. If I can, if after all the stuff gets done and we have this recording, my voice is heard in the archives, then next week my voice will be heard even further and longer for the Jack Hatfield Show After Show. So stay tuned. And again, thank you. If you can't hear my voice and you are listening to this show after show, thanks, Adam West, for coming on. Y'all give him a holler. Have a great day. Go have a libation. Toast me. Thanks a lot.